This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In the movie Minority Report, the character played by Tom Cruise walks into a clothing store and is immediately greeted by name by an apparition dressed as a sales clerk, a hologram. How did those assorted tank tops work out for you, she asks. Well, it turns out a scanning device has identified who he is and his recent sales history. Kind of spooky. Well, that kind of technology is actually available today, though it's hardly as ubiquitous as that futuristic movie makes out. There is a new technology, though, that is starting to permeate society. It's called Radio Frequency Identification, or RFID. It allows companies to track and trace inventory as it moves through the supply chain, and it's being adapted to track people, too. RFID promises to revolutionize inventory control that may extend to retail sales, and some worry about its potential to infringe on our privacy. Later in the program, technology that allows iPod users to create their own private radio stations. But first, the next ubiquitous technology, RFID. If you have questions about how it works, what it could do, or about its possible misuse, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is NPR correspondent Larry Abramson. Good to have you back on the program, Larry. First of all, what is this technology? What is RFID?
Well, first of all, people should know it's not brand new. It's actually been around in some form for decades, actually. But it's becoming much more commonplace, and people may start seeing it in household items. So it's good for them to start thinking about what this actually means. RFID is a computer chip, and I'm holding one in my hand right now. They get as small as fractions of an inch. However, they have to have antennas attached to them because these are wireless devices. And basically what they do is they respond to radiation, to a wireless signal that's sent to them, and then they can send back a response saying, I am chip number such and such. Mm-hmm. Now, there are many different kinds of these chips, and without going into too great a detail about all the different applications that different companies are coming up with, the kind of application that people are most excited about are the chips that basically are very small, very cheap, and can just pop back and say, I am chip number 1,000,001. That's my identification number. They can do this at a distance of several feet in some cases. And there are a lot of applications that manufacturers are imagining for these chips that would basically turn them into the next generation of barcode and a much better form of barcode than what we have widespread today.
So give me a better description of what these look like.
Well, what I'm holding in my hand is basically a very small computer chip. It's just a little piece of wire, basically, a little piece of silicon with, as I mentioned, a large antenna. Because when you bring a scanning device near this thing, the scanning device will send out a signal, a wireless radio signal, and that radio signal needs to be strong enough to bounce back. The interesting thing is that this chip that I'm holding in my hand is, as I mentioned, completely passive. It doesn't have a battery or anything like that attached to it. It can't do anything unless it's excited by this wireless scanner that sends out the energy, and all it can spit back is that one bit of information, its number. However, it's a really big number, 13 to 14 digits, I believe, and that means that it can be identified uniquely. So if you had one of these chips on, say, a box of razor blades in the supermarket, that box of razor blades could respond and say, I am this box of razor blades, rather than, what is the case today, saying, I am a box of razor blades. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a really important distinction. If you're a manufacturer or if you're a grocery store and you want to know when did a certain box of razor blades leave my store, it could be important for theft control, it could be important for inventory control, could be important if you want to know who's buying the most things when. You could even come up, some companies have postulated the idea of a smart shelf that would tell you when the item left the shelf, when it left the store, how long things were sitting there. There's really millions of uses for these things.
And if you knew who bought that particular box of razor blades, you could presumably then send them some sort of a message, say, try our new razor.
That's right. And this is the application that some people are most afraid about, is that these are going to become tracking devices for the most mundane items like razor blades. In the past, these chips were much too expensive to attach to commonplace retail items, but now they're getting down into the 10 to 20 cent range in some cases, depending on how they're used. And so it's possible, and there have been tests done on chips that would basically identify sweaters or food items. It could be anything. And once you're walking around with one of these chips on, say, a piece of clothing, it is not out of the question that somebody could then carry their own reader around and read the chip without your knowledge. Mm-hmm. So basically, you could be carrying a kind of tracking device. However, as I'm sure the guests that you've lined up will point out, these are the most radical and the most futuristic manifestations of this technology, which is still developing. What manufacturers are most excited about right now is what they call warehouse-level applications, and that is, you can imagine, Walmart has billions and billions of boxes moving through their warehouses all the time. They want to get those items out on a regular schedule. They want to know how fast they can do it. This offers them a way to do that without having to scan, without having to get up close to those items, but simply doing it on a really super automated level.
Now, if you went to the drugstore, for example, and got a prescription for something that you weren't quite so sure that you wanted everybody to know about, Prozac, maybe even.
Right.
You could be concerned about privacy in that regard.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I have a little pretend prescription that I got when I paid a visit to a manufacturer recently, and it's an imaginary bottle of pills. I put some ibuprofen in here so you could hear what they sound like, and this has a chip in there, and basically the reader would be able to scan this for pricing or whatever you wanted, whatever information you wanted to put into the database. It could also verify that this was a legitimate drug as opposed to a counterfeit drug, and that's one of the uses imagined because there's a pretty large problem with counterfeiting. There's also a problem with people not taking their medication, so this would be one way to make sure that you knew that people were taking their medication on a regular basis. Now, the reason I got this bottle, though, is I was at a company called RSA Security. They do security, not inventory control, and they said, well, this is a good example of a way to deploy this technology while preserving privacy, and they invented a bag that you could put this pill bottle in, and the bag had its own chip. The chip in the bag counteracts the chip in the pill bottle, and so suddenly the pill bottle is invisible. If there was a scanner in the store or a scanner, anybody had, it wouldn't be able to see this bottle anymore. So it's a chip-blocking technology. And this is one of the ideas, that even though this technology does raise privacy questions, there may be technology solutions that could help ensure privacy. However, as I'm sure our guests will point out, many people feel that this technology also needs legal safeguards so that if this information does get into private or public databases, there's some sort of sanction against companies for releasing this kind of information.
If you'd like to join our conversation, 800-989-8255. You can also email us, totn@npr.org. Let's talk with Gail, who's on the line with us from St. Louis.
Hi. I know that privacy is an issue, but aren't there situations where a tag could help me, say, in finding a lost pet?
That's possible. One of the things that I probably didn't underscore enough, though, is that most of these tags do not have a very long range. And the passive tags that I was talking about, you really have to be within, in some cases, a few inches or a few feet of the tag, and you can't have any metal blocking the path to the tag. So it wouldn't help you track a pet over very long distances. If they put a tag on your pet that had a battery in it or a little bit more power along the lines of what you use when you go through a toll station on the
Easy Pass, yeah.
Yeah, Easy Pass, exactly. That's, 20, 30 feet. So that it has more power. It's able to track the car as it goes through at 20 miles an hour. That might help you track your pet over a certain amount of distance, but it wouldn't find your pet, 3 or 4 blocks away.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Gail.
Mm-hmm.
But they are using devices, either active RFID, that's with the battery that transmits a little further, or passive, to follow a lot of different kinds of animals and even kids in amusement parks.
Right. Well, there's the amusement park example is an interesting one. Lego has a park in Denmark, in their home country.
I think it's Legoland.
I think it is Legoland. And you can attach a bracelet to your kid, and if you lose your child on one of the rides, you dial a cell phone number on your cell phone, and you can find where your child is. What Lego has done, though, is something very sophisticated. They've basically turned the park, as I understand it, into like a 2 million square foot wireless network. So the wireless network that you have in your home for your computer, imagine that on a really large scale, and just like you can tell where the computer is in your home, this allows you to tell where the kids are. Again, doing that over, you know, a whole city or something like that so that you could find things is not as practical. It's a little tougher to implement this technology for items that do not want to be found. Inanimate objects like boxes and things that are sitting on the shelf in a warehouse and where they are likely to come in close contact with one of these readers, that's a little more straightforward.
Well, a follow-up on that first phone call, this from Dave in Colorado by email. My dog has one of these implanted in his back in case he's ever lost with or without his collar. All SPCAs scan stray dogs when they come in. The chip is then checked against a database with my contact information and the dog's medical information. It's a comfort to know he has it, but I'm rather afraid of the applications associated with people having these chips.
Right. And, of course, in that case, the chip is brought right up to the reader, and so you can get the information that's inside it. And it certainly can be helpful in figuring out who that dog is or who the person is in the case of these children. But as I said, I don't think that would work over a very long distance.
Well, joining us now from his office in Princeton, New Jersey, is Jack Grosso, Senior Director of Public Relations for EPC Global, a not-for-profit organization that develops standards for RFID technology. Good of you to join us today.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
EPC stands for Electronic Product Code. That's the code that's embedded into those microscopic smart tags and attached to an item. EPC Global represents retailers and pharmaceutical companies. What's the benefit to them in RFID?
Well, I hardly know where to begin. The benefits are enormous when you look at the long term of applying this technology on a very, very broad basis. To be specific about pharmaceuticals, for example, as you know, worldwide counterfeiting of drugs is a tremendous problem. It's estimated that up to $500 billion worth of drugs are counterfeited every year, and in some countries, as many as 50% of all the medications are counterfeit. As your guest said earlier, that this technology could do a lot to eliminate that problem and make people feel better and safer in using drugs, since they would be sure that it would be an absolute perfect authentic drug, and in fact the one that they prescribed. So
that pill bottle that Larry was rattling around earlier, right now bottles like that are not being tagged. But
that's right.
Do you see that as the eventual goal?
Eventually, that is the goal, that the items that you buy at retail would have tags on them. And it's anticipated that among the first items to be so tagged would be pharmaceuticals, prescription drugs, and so on. And developing the technology to achieve that goal is a very widely held objective among many groups who are looking at the rollout of this technology right now.
We just have a few seconds left in this segment. What's the most intriguing use of RFID that you've seen about so far?
Pharmaceuticals, I think, is an intriguing one, but the fact that this technology can save hundreds of billions of dollars across the global supply chain is I think, an intriguing one. It's a rather broad one that will have good application to consumers and businesses alike.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Jack Grosso, Senior Director of Public Relations for EPC Global, speaking with us from his office in Princeton, New Jersey. When we come back from a break, we'll continue our conversation about RFID, radio frequency identification tags, that are becoming increasingly used in all sorts of applications across the entire spectrum of tracking inventory and maybe eventually in retail sales as well. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about RFID, radio frequency identification. These are tags that track and trace items through the supply chain. They have the potential to help track the movements of people in certain circumstances. Our guest is NPR correspondent Larry Abramson. Of course, you're invited to join us. What do you think about this technology, about its benefits, and about its possible costs? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. And let's go to Kevin. Kevin's on the line from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, yes. I'm curious what could possibly stop this from being used in the future for tracking products afterwards. When it becomes powerful enough to where you could, like, get it through a wall, somebody could drive by your house and say, oh, this is what he's bought in the past 6 years. Is there anything to prevent that?
Larry?
Well, one thing that prevents it right now is, as I mentioned, is simply the distance and the fact that these things are very easily blocked. In fact, that's one of the big problems right now is that they have to come up with different shapes for the antenna depending on what kind of box they're being put on. And if you put it up against a human body, the body apparently absorbs so much energy that it's almost impossible to read one of these chips. So they're trying to make these things easier to read right now. So that's one thing is physics that gets in the way. And then the other thing might be laws that either have been written or have not yet been written that would say you just can't do this kind of thing. And that's what some privacy advocates feel like we need to do before this technology is widely deployed, is come up with some basic rules. In the past, this country has been reluctant to pass specific laws about privacy. It's usually relegated to protecting kinds of information, medical information or financial information. But privacy groups have had a hard time saying, all right, any sort of database that you acquire about a person's purchasing habits must be kept private unless that person signs a waiver. They've had a hard time pushing that stuff through Congress about internet purchases, and it might be difficult to do it for RFID purchases. But that concern is there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
There have been proposals to use this or microchips to make smart driver's licenses, and there has been concern about that. I think every time it's come up in every state it's been proposed, it's been defeated.
Right. Well, this to me is an interesting example because I think in some ways it's so banal in that a lot of driver's licenses now already have a magnetic stripe on it. That stripe has information about your birth date and whether you have restrictions on your license. You can only drive during the day, or you're supposed to be wearing glasses. An RFID chip would simply be another form of that kind of identification. It might allow a policeman to possibly scan your license without asking you for it. But again, that's sort of an exotic reach. And I think a lot of the state of Virginia was looking at this, and it's not immediately clear that this brings them any additional benefits beyond what they already have. In many states now, in fact, you bring your driver's license in do a bar and it's scanned to make sure that you're 21. They have little scanners. It's just a different technology. It's a medical, a magnetic scanner like they use in the metro, for example, in Washington, D.C. So that in some ways is just sort of an evolutionary step.
Yeah, but people do worry about these devices that can say, well, he was at McGillicuddy's bar at 8:30 last night. We know because it swiped his thing.
Right, and it's already a problem, I guess, is one of the things that the supporters of the technology bring up, is that you already have these concerns about any sort of tracking technology that's already out there. This is just one more form of possible tracking. We just need to come up with standards of behavior. And EPC Global, I think, has come up with a model of behavior for corporations, and they include the fact that they want consumers to be notified when these chips are included on things that they buy, so that when you go to the store, there would be a sign saying, our items have tags on them. If you'd like to have it removed, please ask, or have it you can have it neutralized so that it's just sitting there dead. And they say that really ought to ease all of the privacy concerns that are out there.
Well, some schools are considering using this technology to help keep track of students in the school. One school already using RFID is the Enterprise Charter School in Buffalo, New York. Mark Walter, the chief technical officer of the Enterprise Charter School, joins us now from his home there. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, sir.
Why did you decide to use RFID?
Actually, it increases the teaching time that our teachers have, in that they don't have to spend 5 or 10 minutes calling out kids' names to see if they're there, marking them tardy when they come in tardy. So instead, when the children walk in, they walk past a kiosk, and it checks them in. and then our attendance has been automatically done for us.
Hmm. How does it work? What do they carry, some sort of an ID card?
It's exactly that. It looks just like a license. It's the same size. It's on a little tag. It has their picture and their name on it. And when they walk in, not only does it identify them as an Enterprise Charter School student, but it checks them in. And when they go to lunch, there's another kiosk that allows the lunch lady to see what type of lunch this child receives, be it a free or reduced lunch.
Mm-hmm. What if I wanted to ditch school? Could I convince my buddy to carry my tag in for me?
Yes, you could do that. And then we go back to the fallibility of the system, and that's the same thing that's being raised when people are using it to track people, and when they go to bars, it wasn't I who was there, it was someone else using my ID.
I see.
So, yeah, the kids could do that, but most teachers know. It's more for the speed of it than anything.
And these are kids, I assume, a fair percentage of them forget their tag from time to time.
Well, the younger grades, we have the children keep them in a basket. When they get off the bus, they get their ID tag, they put it on, they walk in. When they walk out of school, we take it back. When they get to third grade or so, then the responsibility is theirs. And there's an incentive at the end of the week. They get to have a pizza party, something like that, if they remember their ID every day that week.
Hmm. So what does this allow you to do now that you couldn't do the old-fashioned way by saying, Jones, say present?
Quickly bring up information. For instance, the State Education Department loves for us to say what percentage of kids were in attendance on September 14th, for example. With the click of a button, we can bring up what percentage of kids were in the building and who weren't. So in that regard, it makes things much, much quicker.
What's been the reaction from parents and from students?
Interesting that you bring that up. Most of our parents are happy with it because their kids are happy. They have their picture. It makes them feel important. They don't really raise the concerns that the electronic freedom frontier would bring up, for example, about invasion of privacy. So they're pretty pleased parent-wise. The only backlash that we have gotten was an interview that we gave to Wired magazine that kind of put the Big Brother spin on it. We don't do that. We don't have a large map in our office that tracks kids. I mean, as was stated earlier in the program, you have to be about a foot and a half away from our kiosk in order for it to be read. And outside of that, it's just a piece of plastic.
So the kids have to wear these tags. What about the teachers?
Oh, yes. Staff has them as well. Staffs allow us to gain entry to the building during off hours. We have a card reader outside, and they present their card, and they can come in and work on Saturday or Sunday if they want.
How much did this cost, and who paid for it?
Oh, good question. It's actually considerably, we were going to go with a much more expensive unit, a $60,000 unit, which would go over the door, much akin to an x-ray machine that you find in an airport. Instead, we went with a $25,000 unit, which is just a standalone kiosk, and we ended up paying for it.
And compared to the other systems that were available, I mean, does this feel like you're going to make up the money?
I would say insofar as teaching time devoted to the children, absolutely. If you look at, we have perhaps 50 teachers on staff, and each teacher saves 10 minutes a day, and we have school 200 days a year. That's a substantial savings in time.
Mark Walter, thanks very much.
You're quite welcome.
Mark Walter is the Chief Technical Officer for the Enterprise Charter School, and he joined us by phone from Buffalo, New York. And Larry, as he was describing it, this is a fairly limited capability for tracking people.
Sounds pretty harmless. I think the one question that it raises is, you know, this is information that was always there, attendance information that was written down in a little book somewhere and stuck in a corner. However, when you digitize information, it can, of course, be transported, put into larger databases, and it can be stolen more easily if they're reporting on every student's whereabouts in the building. And that's one of the things that I think the American Civil Liberties Union, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, has been on the lookout for, is that once you put all of this information in a form, that it can be put into a big database and it can be compiled with other information much more easily, information from credit card purchases or the toll passes, other things that could tell where you are. It becomes a greater source of concern. Whereas if everything is written down by hand, the way it used to be in the old days, it's a lot more difficult to do that. The police have always done that kind of gumshoe work, but it's possible that this would make the job of surveillance for them too easy.
Let's get another caller on the line. Peter's with us from San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. It's Peter Warfield from Library Users Association. And I'm very concerned about we're very concerned about the intellectual freedom issues that come up when these chips are used in libraries for tracking books as opposed to barcodes, which are currently in use. And there's also a concern that I've got, which is loss of materials. A very, very inexpensive household materials can be used to block the signal, and I'm concerned that our libraries that may adopt this would lose materials, especially the most valuable and the irreplaceable ones. The privacy threat comes not from within the library, but from others unauthorized outside who may be using the chips to read what people are reading or to figure out where they're going and when.
Let me get this straight, Peter. These are being installed in books, so when you're checking a book out of the library, you just pass it by one of these readers and present your own library card so they know who took out the book.
Generally, that's right, and also for it, when they're used for security, they you pass through a security gate. In San Francisco, the library wanted...
Oh, so they make sure that you're taking out a book that you've actually checked out. You're not stealing a book.
Exactly. And here in San Francisco, they wanted to put an initial program into effect, but the supervisors have not given them unconditional funding. There are libraries that have started using this technology, however.
And you're afraid that this will result in databases being assembled of which books which individuals have checked out?
Well, that's possible, but certainly what I'm concerned about is that somebody tracking an individual, for instance, with a portable reader that's readily available, or who places unobtrusively readers in places outside the library, could track who is entering and when and with what materials, or read what materials you are reading.
As far as the technology exists thus far, Larry, is that a reasonable concern?
Well, I don't know if it's reasonable in the sense that I think we're a long way away from there being, you know, hundreds of readers out there in the world. It would be a very expensive undertaking. I don't think it's a concern that should be just tossed aside, but it seems right now it would be a big undertaking to try to create a network like that. I think it's interesting, though. I've heard from librarians who feel like this might save them enough money to keep their library open if they're able to speed up the checkout and the check-in process. It offers them a savings in the sense that this is both inventory control and also it allows you to stop things from being stolen at the same time as it allows you to check things in and check out. And right now they usually have two different systems, the zebra stripe for the check-in and check-out and a magnetic stripe that stops you from stealing things. So I think for libraries, there's also the appeal of just being able to resist budget cuts by adopting a system that's possibly more cost-effective.
Mm-hmm. Peter, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Here's a technical question from Bill on email. Are there temperature extremes for RFIDs? Will they work on frozen food or an engine block?
I think that there are. I have read that there are temperature extremes, and I don't know what they are. I'm sure they're different for all different kinds of chips. It's interesting, as you and I were talking during the break, the military is very interested in this technology. In fact, they're requiring it from a lot of suppliers in the next year, I believe. And, of course, military equipment is subjected to intense extremes, so it'll be interesting to see what they learn about just how well these things hold up. But it's certainly, I would think, something that they would have to watch out for. And in these warehouse situations, there's usually pretty good control over those temperatures.
We're talking about tracking tags known as RFID. That's radio frequency identification. Our guest is NPR correspondent Larry Abramson. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I've always wanted to say this bulletin just handed me. The Food and Drug Administration on Wednesday approved an implantable computer chip that can pass a patient's medical details to doctors, speeding care. Verichips, radio frequency microchips the size of a grain of rice, this according to the Associated Press, have already been used to identify wayward pets and livestock. Nearly 200 people working in Mexico's Attorney General's office have been implanted with chips to access secure areas containing sensitive documents. Delray Beach, Florida-based Applied Digital Solutions said it would give away $650 scanners to roughly 200 trauma centers around the nation to help speed its entry into the healthcare market. So another use there.
Addressing a big problem, medical error. A doctor walking in and giving the wrong drug to the wrong patient, something that happens in a busy hospital all the time. This would simplify that process, make it possible for a doctor to be sure that they were, you can even have codes in there that would prevent them from administering any drug but the one that patient was allowed to receive. So it sounds like a very intriguing idea. And again, it just seems to augment a failing in the system that's there right now.
But this use in Mexico of implanting these devices in people, that gets a little scary.
Yes. Well, I think that is the science fiction scenario. I think there was a rumor on the internet for a while back about a gun that could shoot these chips into your body, possibly without your knowledge. And, these are the extremes that the imagination runs to when technology gets as exotic as some of these things begin to sound. But, I think we should remember people have gotten paranoid in the past with very good reason, because sometimes the weirdest things happen.
There is another application in the healthcare industry for Alzheimer's patients. Tell us about that.
Well, I think maybe you're talking about tracking technology that would allow you to see where somebody is in a house, or see whether or not they're whether they've taken their medicine. Would be another opportunity. I don't know about any specific applications beyond those.
All right, let's get another caller on the line. This is Andrew. Andrew's calling from Davis, California.
Yeah, I have a question about whether this technology could be democratized. In other words, will individuals be able to buy scanners for their own home use, so they can scan these devices? And once you scan a code, will you be able to look up where this object is from?
Well, that's a very good question. There's no reason why you couldn't, except right now it would cost you $50,000 or something to buy one of these scanners, and there's not a big demand for it. But I think that as these things become more ubiquitous and you're trying to find out, one of the imagined applications is that you buy a sweater and you want to be sure that you're washing it properly. So you pass it over a scanner on your washing machine and it says dry clean only or something. It tells you what this thing is made out of and how it should be taken care of. Or you could have a smart refrigerator that says this milk was bought 2 weeks ago. I don't think you want to drink it anymore. So I think you may well see it in those sorts of forms. I'm not sure whether you'll see it in the form of just a generic scanner that you can walk around your house, looking for things with, but it's not out of the question.
Well, that's what Tim Beecham suggested by email. I want an RFID chip on all those items I'm rushing around the house for in the morning, my keys, my cell phone, my wallet, my coffee cup, so I can quickly find it in the house when I usually spend 5 minutes trying to find it where I left it and miss my train.
Well, I think these already exist. I think the Sharper Image has a form of this. It's like a beeper that you attach to your keys, so it's not quite the same thing, but yeah, I would definitely like that for my wife's car keys, which nobody can ever find.
Not quite as cool, but it still works. Andrew, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
When we come back from a short break, more about privacy and RFID, plus another use for low-powered radio frequencies. Instead of tracking your groceries, a gadget that will broadcast your tracks off your iPod. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after a short break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about what some are calling the next ubiquitous technology, RFIDs, radio frequency identification, little microchips that serve as tags on all kinds of products that may soon be used in retail applications. Our guest is NPR correspondent Larry Abramson. One of the groups with concerns over privacy on this issue is the American Civil Liberties Union, and joining us now from his office in New York is Barry Steinhardt, director of the ACLU's Technology and Liberty Program, and good to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
What is it about RFID that makes you worry?
Oh, RFID really can become the key to a universal system of tracking. We've gone long beyond putting them in the shipping pallets at Walmart and sweaters. The U.S. government, for example, is proposing to put them at the passports that are carried by roughly 20 million Americans. There are proposals both in the Homeland Security bills in the Congress and came out of the 9/11 Commission to put them in driver's licenses, which are carried by virtually every adult American. RFID chips are going to become the way in which the government, in particular, but also private industry tracks us.
But with a passport, they're tracking you already.
Well, yes, but RFID chips are very different for a couple of reasons. First, they're going to allow for tracking without your knowledge. They can be remotely read. And in fact, the security that's part of the international standard that's being developed for the RFID chips is actually quite weak. But imagine them in driver's licenses. If anybody can scan your driver's license to get the information that is on an RFID chip, it means everybody from identity thieves to terrorists, heaven forbid, to ordinary criminals, to the government, are going to be scanning these RFID chips. And there's been very little attention paid as these programs are being unfolded to not only the privacy concerns, but the safety and the security concerns. It's quite possible that we're going to build a system that's going to make us more insecure over time by allowing the bad guys to get the information rather easily.
As I understand the technology, you have to be within a couple of feet of a scanner for it to read anything.
That's simply not true. The government tested, for example, NIST, which is the government's National Standards Testing Laboratory, tested for the Department of State, which is doing the new biometric and RFID-laden passports. They tested, and they found that you could read the RFID chips that are part of the international standard at 20 meters, which is roughly 30 feet. And in fact, the technology, of course, is getting more powerful all the time. There are serious discussions in transportation circles about what are known as intelligent highways, which will either have RFID readers that will be actually embedded into the roadway because RFID tags are actually in more and more tires and more cars, as well as portable RFID readers that would be used at overpasses and other junctions where police officers or others could read. As the technology gets more powerful, we're already not limited to 2 feet. You shouldn't believe that. The government's own tests show we're not limited to 2 feet. It's at least 30 feet, and it's probably more.
Larry?
Barry, it's Larry Abramson.
Yep.
So from that, would you conclude that this technology should be blocked somehow? And if so, you know, how would you describe it so that you can block it? Or what kind of regulations would you propose that might make people more secure?
So, you know, that's a good question, Larry. I mean, this is like a lot of technologies that are being developed now that have both appropriate uses and inappropriate uses. I mean, we're not Luddites here. We're not saying smash the RFID chips. The problem is that the technologies are being developed at the speed of light, but the law just drags behind somewhere in the 18th century. We don't have laws now that apply what are known as the fair information principles, which are accepted in most of the rest of the world, and which we invented here in the U.S., as I suspect you know, particularly to the government's own use of these kinds of technologies. Notice to the individual from whom information is being collected, the ability to know what information is being collected, restrictions on secondary uses of that information, so that if if there's going to be an RFID chip and a passport, so that the passport can be read at the border by what used to be called the Customs Service. It can't be read by somebody else, and it's not going to be used for some other purpose. There are any number of things we can do to make ourselves more secure in our privacy and our liberty without jeopardizing our physical security. Problem is that in this headlong rush to adopt these new technologies and put them into everyday common identifiers as well as goods, we're just bypassing completely the privacy concerns and the restrictions.
Barry Steinhardt, I wanted to get your reaction. Earlier, we read this news item that the Food and Drug Administration today approved an implantable computer chip that could pass a patient's medical details to a doctor's speeding care. It's called the VeriChip, a radio frequency microchip, the size of a grain of rice. It could be implanted in. It's already been used to track, as I understand it, wayward pets and livestock.
Yeah, well, it actually has been implanted in humans, as I think the story that you read noted. A number of officials in Mexico, government officials of Mexico, have had them implanted because they fear being
kidnapped.
But you got to think this one through from a security point of view. If the government can read the chip, or if the hospital can read the chip, in order to be able to determine your identity, so can those who want to do you harm. So I've never, in fact, understood why the Mexican government was implanting their public officials with these chips. I mean, imagine, this is the somewhat exotic technology, right, or exotic use, literally a subdermal implant of the chip into people, although it will. You know, it's
beginning to happen around the world, and it will begin to happen in the U.S., the more likely use of these chips is not implanting them in people, but implanting them in things that people carry.
Mm-hmm. If you were unconscious and brought into the hospital, it would be nice for the doctors to know that you're allergic to penicillin or something like that.
Well, sure. I mean, there are, of course, questions about whether or not it will actually serve that purpose. But there are other ways to deal with that problem beyond implanting it. If that were the question, you would literally have to implant it into every American because you don't know who's going to get carried into the hospital unconscious. The proposals now for this company are to implant them into, say, Alzheimer's patients, persons who are not able to identify themselves, children. As a close family member who has Alzheimer's, I can tell you that, I worry about such things, but I would not put his legal guardian, I would not put an RFID chip in his arm because I know how many other people can read it.
Okay. Finally, I just wanted to get a response to this email and also from you as well, Larry. This from a resident of Park City, Utah. Is there any way a person can know which products have these devices in or on them? And if so, is there any way to deactivate or remove the device? This is an issue of privacy. The writer says, I don't give a hoot about the manufacturer wanting to track it.
Well, I would expect that we will see a small underground network of producers springing up that will make such things so that you can get around so that you can tell when these chips are actually implanted in the products, because there is such a strong concern about privacy here. Don't you think so, Barry?
Well, yes, but we really need to have laws that require that. I mean, such laws have been debated in places like California.
Notification laws. This sweater has an RFID.
Well, at a minimum, notification laws and the ability to California actually does have a notification law and the ability to remove the chip. That's when they're in consumer goods. You're going to get probably notice that they're in your driver's license or your passport if you look carefully, but you're not going to have any ability to turn them off. So we need to debate up front whether we want to go down that route or not.
And don't you think that you could probably prosecute a company that lied and said they didn't put chips in their products when they did under existing laws?
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, I'm sure that can probably will happen. But companies are quite anxious to tell you that they have an RFID chip in a product because it becomes a way of selling it to the retailers, to the middlemen here. It makes it more attractive. So frequently we're going to be told, even when there's no requirement of disclosure.
Barry Steinhardt, thanks very much for being with us today.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
Barry Steinhardt is director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Technology and Liberty Program. We reached him at his office in New York City, and we'd also like to thank our guest, Larry Abramson, NPR correspondent, for being with us here in Studio 3.
Thanks for having me.
Larry. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.